In the annals of intellectual history, few books have captured the terrifying dance between genius and madness quite like Benjamin Labatut's The Maniac. This haunting exploration of the 20th century's most brilliant minds has become a sensation among scientists and philosophers alike, with figures from Elon Musk to Yuval Noah Harari citing it as essential reading. The book's power lies in its unflinching portrayal of how humanity's greatest intellects often teetered on the edge of sanity as they peered into the mathematical abyss. Labatut masterfully weaves together the stories of mathematical prodigies whose work fundamentally altered our world, from nuclear weapons to artificial intelligence, while their own minds unraveled in the process. What makes this narrative particularly chilling is how it forces us to confront an uncomfortable question. What happens when the most powerful tools of reason lead us to conclusions that defy human comprehension? The tragedy of Paul Ehrenfest serves as our entry point into the dangerous territory where genius meets despair. Once revered as the conscience of physics by giants like Einstein and Bohr, Ehrenfest's story culminates in an unthinkable act, the murder of his Down syndrome son Vasily, followed by his own suicide on September 25, 1933. This wasn't merely a personal tragedy, but a symbolic moment marking the collapse of an entire worldview. As quantum mechanics revolutionized physics, Ehrenfest found himself increasingly alienated from his own field. The intuitive physical understanding that had been his strength became obsolete as abstract mathematics took center stage. "It is inhuman," he confessed to Bohr in 1931, describing modern physics journals as truly diabolic machines. His intellectual alienation paralleled Europe's darkening political landscape, with rising anti-Semitism and Nazi policies targeting both Jews and those with hereditary diseases. What makes Ehrenfest's story particularly haunting is how his professional despair intertwined with personal anguish. His marriage crumbled, financial troubles mounted, and an affair with art historian Nelly Posthumus Mayus only deepened his torment. Through Nelly, he became obsessed with the Pythagorean concept of the irrational, the mathematical proof that some quantities defy neat categorization, suggesting that nature itself contains elements that cannot be ordered or fully comprehended. In his final months, Ehrenfest experienced a brief manic period where he believed he could solve turbulence, that chaotic phenomenon where fluids break into unpredictable eddies. This false epiphany, like a cruel joke of the universe, gave way to deeper despair. On his final day, after discussing physics and religion with a former student, he boarded a train to Amsterdam with a gun in his pocket, haunted by memories and resigned to his fate. His suicide note explained he could no longer bear life's burden or his inability to understand the new physics. A brilliant mind that preferred oblivion to incomprehension. There are two kinds of people, Jansi von Neumann and everyone else. With these words, Eugene Wigner introduces us to perhaps the most extraordinary intellect of the 20th century, John von Neumann, a man so brilliant that his colleagues considered him almost inhuman. Born Neumann Janos Lajos in Budapest, this mathematical prodigy could divide eight-digit numbers in his head by age 6 and had mastered calculus before most children learn multiplication tables. Von Neumann's mind worked at a pace that left even other geniuses breathless. His doctoral examination so stunned mathematician David Hilbert that the renowned professor's only question was about the young Hungarian's tailor. Despite his awkward appearance and strange mannerisms, von Neumann moved through scientific disciplines with hummingbird-like hunger, revolutionizing every field he touched, from quantum mechanics to computer science, from economics to nuclear weapons design. What makes von Neumann's story particularly poignant is the contrast between his superhuman intellect and his all-too-human end. As cancer spread to his brain at age 53, he was kept under military guard at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, attended by top officials desperately hoping for one final insight from the genius who had promised everything from digital life to climate control technologies. Despite his extraordinary mind, he died in agony and delirium, just like any other man. Von Neumann's childhood reveals fascinating glimpses into his development. His mother described him as different from the beginning, noting that even as an infant, he unnervingly resembled a middle-aged man. Though polite and generous, he displayed contradictory traits, simultaneously reckless yet calculating, mischievous yet brilliant. His brother recalls how a mechanical textile loom that used binary logic, ones and zeros, to create complex patterns became young Yancey's obsession, perhaps foreshadowing his later creation of the modern computer architecture. What emerges is a portrait of a man fundamentally unknowable, even to his family and wives. His otherworldly clarity of thought allowed him to solve complex mathematical problems in minutes while appearing to enter trance-like states. Yet this same brilliance created a moral blindness that would have profound consequences for humanity as he turned his attention to weapons of unimaginable destruction. Von Neumann's early career coincided with a profound crisis in mathematics, a search for absolute foundations that would ultimately reveal the limits of human reason itself. In the early 1920s, David Hilbert proposed an ambitious program to determine whether mathematics could be built from a unique set of axioms, establishing a complete and consistent foundation to avoid the paradoxes threatening the entire mathematical edifice. This program proved irresistible to young von Neumann, who believed science should rest on immutable mathematical truths. The stakes couldn't have been higher. The very foundations of rational thought were at risk. The crisis had begun with George Cantor's work on infinity, which had driven his creator to madness. Cantor's mental health deteriorated severely, with uncontrollable manic episodes followed by the darkest depression. During these crises, his entire personality transformed. He would shriek uncontrollably, then fall completely silent or succumb to paranoid fantasies. Between breakdowns, he continued teaching and working on his infinities, but became trapped in a vicious cycle of proving the continuum hypothesis first true, then false, over and over again. Bertrand Russell had discovered a fatal paradox in set theory in 1901, becoming so obsessed it haunted his dreams. With Alfred North Whitehead, he attempted to reduce all mathematics to logic in their massive treatise Principia Mathematica, spending 762 pages just proving 1 plus 1 equals 2. This attempt also failed, and Russell developed recurring nightmares about a librarian deciding whether to burn his life's work. Unlike Russell and Whitehead's 2,000 plus pages, von Neumann's doctoral thesis was remarkably concise. His axioms fit on a single sheet. His approach demonstrated his signature style, pouncing on subjects, stripping them to bare axioms, and transforming everything into pure logic. This otherworldly capacity to see fundamentals was both his genius and the explanation for his almost childlike moral blindness. The climactic moment came in Königsberg in September 1930, when a skeletal young Austrian named Kurt Gödel spoke so softly the note-taker missed his words. I believe that we can postulate within any consistent formal system a statement that is true, but that can never be proven within the rules of said system. Most ignored him or couldn't comprehend the statement, but von Neumann immediately grasped its devastating implications. Gödel had proven that any formal system of axioms, free of contradictions, would always be incomplete, containing truths that could never be proven within that system. This was the end of Hilbert's program and von Neumann's personal catastrophe, opening a rift no future knowledge could repair. When von Neumann returned to Budapest, he locked himself away for 2 months, working obsessively while his wife heard him screaming in 6 languages. He emerged with a remarkable corollary. If a system was complete, it could never be free of contradictions. Between Gödel and von Neumann, mathematicians faced an intolerable dilemma: accept terrible paradoxes or work with unverifiable truths. After this intellectual defeat, something vital was missing in von Neumann. An emptiness spread beyond mathematics into his entire worldview, which darkened progressively. Once he abandoned his juvenile faith in mathematics after Gödel's revelation, he became more practical, but also more dangerous, set free to pursue power rather than pure truth. When World War II erupted, von Neumann and a remarkable group of Hungarian scientists, dubbed the Martians by Enrico Fermi, played an outsized role in America's nuclear program. Leo Szilard conceived the nuclear chain reaction while crossing a London street. Theodor von Karman mastered supersonic flight and rocket propulsion. Eugene Wigner led design of nuclear reactors for weapons-grade plutonium. Edward Teller fathered the hydrogen bomb. Von Neumann himself called them the Hungarian horsemen of the apocalypse. At Los Alamos, von Neumann joined the computation department to help with the plutonium bomb's implosion design, a problem requiring godlike mathematics that even he couldn't solve manually. The hydrodynamics were too complex, but that impossibility seduced him. They created a mathematical assembly line where each computer, mostly women, performed a single operation repeatedly, functioning like the machines we use today. Richard Feynman recalls the Trinity test, where he foolishly looked directly at the explosion without proper protection. When it detonated at 5:29:45 a.m., he saw nothing but blinding white light that erased the world, followed by mountain ridges illuminated in searing colors and an unexpected wave of heat on his skin. Some cheered, while others prayed silently as the mushroom cloud rose into the stratosphere, thunder echoing across the mountains like a bell tolling for the end of the world. After the test, over 150 Manhattan Project members signed a petition urging the president not to use the bomb against Japan, arguing that a demonstration would suffice. But Truman never received it, and von Neumann himself calculated the optimal detonation height, 600 meters, to maximize damage over Hiroshima and Nagasaki. What drew these brilliant minds to create such weapons wasn't power, wealth, or glory. It was the sheer scientific thrill. The extremities of pressure and temperature, the rarefied physics, the colossal energy release. They were discovering something not even God had created. It was the joy of thinking the unthinkable, pushing past human limits by burning Prometheus's gift to its utmost incandescence. The consequences of their work haunted many scientists afterward. Feynman went through a crippling depression after Los Alamos. Walking around New York, he'd calculate blast radii. If they dropped a bomb on 34th Street, everyone around him would die instantly. Construction workers seemed absurd. Why build anything when it would all be destroyed? Von Neumann's response to the nuclear dilemma perfectly reflected his character, mercilessly logical, counterintuitive, and so utterly rational it bordered on psychopathic. With economist Oscar Morgenstern, he developed game theory, a mathematical framework for analyzing conflicts where interests overlap. Their goal was to capture human decision-making with pristine mathematics, creating equations to analyze strategic interactions. The military seized upon their work with savage delight. Von Neumann, no pacifist, advocated for a preemptive nuclear strike against the USSR as the only rational solution according to their theory. When the Soviets developed their own bombs, their equations birthed the inescapable labyrinth of mad, mutually assured destruction. A precarious equilibrium where bombers circled the globe, submarines patrolled the abyss, and missiles waited in silos for Armageddon's call. This doctrine held that the only way to avoid nuclear warfare between superpowers was for the U.S. and USSR to amass such enormous atomic arsenals that any attack would result in complete annihilation of both countries. It was perfectly rational insanity, ensuring global peace by bringing us to the brink of Armageddon. This corrupt doctrine lasted 4 decades and exemplifies how mankind can become prisoner to reason. Morgenstern later questioned their central tenet. Is there really a rational course of action in every situation? Their framework presupposed perfectly logical agents with flawless awareness. The only person ever like that was von Neumann himself. Normal people follow hunches, make mistakes, sacrifice themselves. Life is more than a game. Its complexity cannot be captured by equations, no matter how beautiful. This human irrationality is our strange angel, protecting us from the mad dreams of reason. In 1952, while American children prepared for Halloween, the hydrogen bomb Ivy Mike exploded in the Pacific with 500 times the power of the bombs dropped on Japan. The monstrosity vaporized an entire island, creating a crater 17 stories deep. The fireball reached 300 million degrees, hotter than the sun's core. The sky turned furnace red as the mushroom cloud grew 5 times taller than Everest. Miles away, birds had their feathers burned off. The heat just kept coming, a physicist recalled. You would swear the whole world was on fire. As soon as the maniac, mathematical analyzer, numerical integrator, and computer, was operational, von Neumann brought in Nils Aall Baricelli, half Norwegian, half Italian, and completely obsessed with creating artificial life. He ran numerical experiments in the computer's spare cycles, attempting to breed digital organisms, strings of numbers that could fuse, mutate, die, procreate, and even form symbiotic relationships. What von Neumann built wasn't the first computer, but it was the one everyone copied. Unlike previous machines that needed physical rewiring for each new program, his design could change software without touching hardware. Von Neumann's architecture, input-output mechanisms, memory, logic/arithmetic unit, and CPU, remains unchanged in modern computers. Building it was hell. War surplus parts, vacuum tubes failing without warning, rooms so hot tar would splatter and ruin months of work, memory so fragile a woolen sweater could wipe it clean. Once a mouse crawled inside and was burned to crisp, the machine forever smelled of charred meat. The military funded this work, dreaming of deadly applications, but von Neumann was thinking bigger. Mathematicizing everything from biology to economics, unleashing unlimited computation to transform human thought. That summer of 1951, scientists from Los Alamos ran calculations on Maniac for 2 months straight, processing over 1 million punched cards for a single yes-no answer. The answer was yes. Von Neumann's first goal for Maniac was to determine if the hydrogen bomb would work. More remarkable was von Neumann's theoretical work on self-reproducing machines. He determined the logical rules behind all self-replication, whether biological, mechanical, or digital. He demonstrated that any self-replicating system needs both a mechanism to copy itself and to copy the instructions specifying that being. Remarkably, he depicted how DNA and RNA work years before anyone glimpsed the double helix. Unlike typical scientific progress that moves from concrete to abstract, von Neumann established the mathematical basis first, with DNA being just one implementation of his rules. He went further by conceptualizing von Neumann probes, self-building spacecraft that could colonize distant worlds, mine materials to replicate themselves, and seed the universe with their progeny long after humanity's extinction. Something profound changed in von Neumann after his cancer diagnosis. His mind exploded with ideas of a kind he'd never entertained before, displaying a formidable fecundity reminiscent of his zeal before Gödel thwarted his attempts to entangle the world in logic. More curious was his development of overwhelming empathy and deep concern for humanity's destiny, feelings he'd never experienced before. These anxieties initially triggered blind panic before transforming into an unquenchable curiosity about spiritual matters completely alien to his previous self. Though he'd always been fascinated by ancient history, he now gorged himself on knowledge of gods and goddesses from cultures worldwide, claiming gods are a biological necessity as integral to our species as language or opposable thumbs. Von Neumann believed faith had given primeval people strength and meaning that modern humans lacked, and this void needed filling by science and technology. He argued our species had stagnated in every area except technology, where our wisdom had become so profound and dangerous that it would have made the Titans cower in fear. As his cancer advanced, his physical suffering intensified despite medication. He drank heavily and overate, growing bloated and obese. His fear wasn't just of death, but of disease itself. He viewed his cancer not as part of him, but as an evil entity colonizing his tissues, corrupting both flesh and newly awakened soul. These horrifying thoughts fueled his desire for consciousness unharnessed from flesh. In his final year, despite excruciating pain, von Neumann produced a wealth of knowledge comparable only to his early Berlin work. He consumed painkillers, hardly slept, and worked at a manic pace that terrified his wife Clary. He retained his humor and self-awareness while studying the brain's relation to automata and computers, attempting to build a mathematical bridge between thought and computation. Before dying, von Neumann lost the will to speak. The horror of experiencing his mental deterioration was too much to bear. He suffered from the loss of his mind more than anyone had ever seen a human being suffer. When his daughter Marina visited him near the end, instead of discussing his work on computing machines in the brain, he asked her to quiz him on basic arithmetic. His genius had deteriorated to where he couldn't handle simple addition. The look of blind panic that twisted his features as this realization overwhelmed him was heart-wrenching. At the end, the military did everything possible to keep him alive, bringing doctors from around the world. Even when hallucinating, he would somehow pull himself together long enough to generate new ideas. In his final days, mysterious machines were wheeled into his hospital room, followed by his screams of agony. Von Neumann was buried in Princeton Cemetery on February 12, 1957, 4 days after his death, in a closed casket. The book's final section leaps forward to explore the legacy of von Neumann's work through the lens of artificial intelligence and the ancient game of Go. In March 2016, Korean Go master Lee Sedol faced DeepMind's AlphaGo in a 5-game match that would become a watershed moment in the history of artificial intelligence. Lee Sedol, known as the Strong Stone, was a 9-dan Go master with 18 international titles, 32 national championships, and over 1,000 individual wins. His trademark was wild, unpredictable moves that seemed chaotic but revealed brilliant logic as games progressed. Despite his shyness, he was never modest, frequently taunting opponents and declaring himself the best player alive. AlphaGo was created by Demis Hassabis, a North London prodigy who had mastered chess at age 4 but abandoned his chess career after a humiliating defeat at 13. Obsessed with understanding the nature of thought itself, Hassabis founded DeepMind in 2010 with the audacious goal to solve artificial general intelligence and then use that to solve everything else. While computers had conquered chess in 1997 when IBM's Deep Blue defeated Garry Kasparov, Go presented a vastly more complex challenge. With a 19x19 board versus chess's 8x8, 200 possible moves per turn versus 20 in chess, and over 1x10^700 potential games versus 10^123 in chess, Go's complexity made brute force approaches impossible. The game's subjective nature, where all pieces have equal value and position determines everything, requires intuition, pattern recognition, and artistic sensibility that computers supposedly couldn't master. The match between Lee and AlphaGo became a defining moment in AI history. After losing the first 2 games, Lee appeared haggard and weak. Playing against the AI induced a sense of despair, a strange feeling of being pulled down into a void, like a black hole sucking you in little by little. In the third game, despite Lee's desperate attempts to attack, AlphaGo countered every move, reaching a 98% likelihood of winning. In the fourth game, Lee's miraculous 78th move, dubbed the Hand of God, stunned everyone by tearing apart AlphaGo's position. The room erupted in celebration. Commentators screamed and laughed, strangers hugged in the streets, and many were moved to tears, as if Lee had won a victory for our entire species. DeepMind's team discovered that AlphaGo had assigned Lee's divine move a probability of 0.001, 1 in 10,000, exactly the same probability as its own groundbreaking move 37 in Game 2. Lee's wedge move was simply too far from human experience, beyond even AlphaGo's seemingly boundless capabilities. Despite this moment of triumph, Lee lost the final game and the match. During the months following his defeat, he won every tournament game by calculating with utmost precision rather than relying on instinct. Despite this success, he shocked the world by retiring at 36, explaining, "After the advent of AI, I've realized I cannot be at the top. Even if I become the best the world has ever known, there is an entity that cannot be defeated." DeepMind then made a radical departure. They stripped AlphaGo of all human knowledge, leaving only its learning algorithm. This new program, AlphaZero, defeated the version of AlphaGo that had beaten Lee Sedol 100 games to zero. When applied to chess, within hours, AlphaZero surpassed all human players and defeated Stockfish, the reigning AI chess champion. For all these games, AlphaZero considered no human experience. It was simply given the rules and allowed to play against itself, evolving from random moves to becoming the strongest entity the world has ever known at Go, chess, and shogi. Labatut's masterful narrative weaves together the stories of brilliant minds who push the boundaries of human knowledge while grappling with the consequences of their discoveries. From Ehrenfest's tragic end to von Neumann's feverish deathbed innovations to Lee Sedol's noble defeat against artificial intelligence, we witness the recurring pattern of human genius confronting its own limitations. The book raises profound questions about the relationship between intelligence and comprehension. Von Neumann's work on computers and self-replicating machines has led to artificial intelligence systems that can now surpass human abilities in domains once thought to require intuition and creativity. Yet these systems operate in ways their creators cannot fully understand, much as quantum mechanics eventually surpassed Ehrenfest's ability to comprehend it. Perhaps most disturbing is the book's suggestion that rationality itself has limits, that the most logical paths can lead to madness or destruction. Godot's incompleteness theorems proved mathematically what these stories demonstrate narratively. There are truths we cannot prove, contradictions we cannot resolve, and perhaps aspects of reality that human minds simply cannot grasp. As we continue to develop increasingly powerful technologies based on these mathematical foundations, we face the same questions that haunted von Neumann in his final days. Are we creating tools that will eventually surpass us? What happens when machines can think in ways we cannot follow? And most importantly, can we ensure these creations serve humanity's best interests when their reasoning may eventually become as incomprehensible to us as quantum physics was to Ehrenfest? In the end, The Maniac is not just a history of brilliant minds, but a warning about the double-edged sword of human ingenuity, our capacity to create tools that may ultimately exceed our ability to control them. Like the ancient game of Go that concludes the narrative, we find ourselves in a contest where the rules may be simple, but the implications are profound and the outcomes increasingly beyond our prediction.